Welcome to the Private Practice Made Perfect podcast with me, Kathy Love. I'm a business coach who helps allied health professionals run powerful and profitable businesses in the disability sector. Join me for cutting-edge interviews with leaders in the allied health and business fields, along with plenty of practical content that you can use to make your business practice perfect. Hello, everybody, and here we are back on the podcast. We are virtual and we are maintaining our social distance. And my guest today is Wendy Smiles, who is most currently known as the CEO and founding director of Smiles Consulting. How are you?
I'm good, thanks, Kathy. How are you?
Very, very, I don't know, I might need to find an adjective. I'm busy thinking and I'm troubleshooting and I'm looking for optimism, all those words that I suspect you are too at the moment.
I am. There's something that's staying in my mind at the moment after my own coaching session by my coacher, I guess, during the week was positioning myself for prosperity.
Yeah.
And it's really helped me think differently in my own change. And that's the piece of the state in my mind. It's a good one.
Now, I've been meaning to have you on the podcast forever. I didn't think it would be quite under these viral circumstances. As I was kind of setting up Zoom, I was trying to remember how long we've known each other. And it goes back to how old our daughters are. Well, so we've known each other, what, 21, 22?
I was pregnant with Alana, who's now 21.
Yes.
That I always remember.
She was stripes across your tummy at the meeting that we met at.
I think I was about 6 months pregnant.
Ugh, wow.
Yeah, so back 21 plus years.
So nowadays you work as a change management consultant, but wind us back a little way. What have you been doing in the last 5 years, 10 years, 15 years? Just give us a taste.
Well, the last 8 years is probably like the last what I call chapter in my life was when I left Australia. Married, talk about, my life has been full of change. So here I was working in Victoria for Scope back in those days.
Scope. You were an OT way back at the beginning.
Well, at the beginning of my career, I was, and still have a heart in occupational therapy. You can never leave occupational therapy behind because it relates to life. And then from, so let's work way back, so 30 years ago. So I was an OT, then I moved into, sort of research and development and sort of supervisory roles, I guess you could call it, through Scope, and also had my private practice in occupational therapy where Kathy and I did lots of joint sort of work and brainstorming and a couple of workshops.
Oh, we did.
Back in those days. And then I moved into management roles because I guess the impetus was a back injury, which sort of prevented me from doing the love of sensory integration work that I was doing with children. But I was really interested in how can we lead teams and build great teams in delivering great healthcare. And I worked in the disability sector, very focused on children's services, but I was really passionate, interested, bamboozled by how to build great teams. So I moved into that, and then I guess after a few years in team management, I was plucked by the organisation I was working with, which was kind of third time around at Scope. Talk about a boomerang career back into disability services, and was plucked into sort of another research role where the organisation started to position itself for the NDIS before the NDIS was positioning. It was a really cool role. So I worked with the finance team. I mean,
yay, spreadsheets. You love a spreadsheet.
I learned spreadsheets galore. So why does an OT end up in a finance team? Many people in the organisation asked me that too, as well as behind closed doors.
It's on the OT.
So I loved it. So we were analysing basically the cost of services in preparation for the reorientation to the NDI, what became the NDIS. And then I moved into a project management role. Knew not much about projects except I knew I loved change. and was made responsible, and I'm using the word made, responsible for implementing a system, which the client relationship management system statewide for Scope. I didn't know anything about technology.
In Victoria, Australia.
Yeah. Just knew I liked systems, respected them, and ended up leading a 3-year project that became, was meant to be 1 year. It was hugely underfunded and under-resourced. We had the board coming in and saying, what is going on? And that got analysed to the nth degree about why we were not delivering, and ended up leading a team of 12 people to develop and implement the CRMS, which was Goldcare at that point. And I think Scopes might have changed its system, but that was 11 years ago.
Preparation for individual funding. Yeah.
It was really cool to be at the beginning of individual funding. But so I took up what they called the project management role, but it became really obvious that we needed to focus on the people. So I had a great opportunity to be coached by an expert in change almost weekly to lead both the change management and project management, what I call levers of that project. And I still don't know how I did it. Sometimes not so well, both from a health perspective and mental perspective and probably organisational perspective, but great learning ground to then building a career in and really change projects. So I love the change management people side, and I think that's the OT in me. But I also know you can't do great change without good project methodology. So I focus on, really working with leadership. There's also no change happens without leadership on board. And that could be just the CEO of, a small business to the CEO of an organisation of, thousands of people. And then as the project methodology side and the change management methodology side. But from Scope, I thought my career was going to be at Scope or in healthcare in Australia. Maybe just Melbourne at that point.
There's a little clue. People have picked up that sometimes you say project and sometimes you say project.
Project. Oh, God. Project.
What happened next?
Process.
Well,
then
process.
I married a wonderful man, second marriage, wonderful man, who has the best surname, Smiles, and adopted his name because, God, who wouldn't?
Pretty good.
With that name.
A bit like mine.
Yeah. And then I didn't even have to pay for it. We moved to Malaysia. So we thought for 3 years, and 2 years into Malaysia, we moved to the US, and I lived in downtown Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, for 4 years. And then we started to think about this as a long way from home, time zone wise and travel wise. And I hate snow. I hate shoveling snow. Had to do that for 4 years, and I just said to my husband, John, I'm not doing it for a fifth year. So we started navigating a way back to getting to Australia or closer to Australia, and ended up back in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia for the last, how many years now,
three.
2.5 years. And talk about timing and synchronicity. We started to think, oh, we really want to come back to Australia. We're getting on 8 years. And started to do a plan. You know, what good project management doesn't do a plan?
Oh, you guys and your plans.
We planned our way back to Australia just as the coronavirus started to appear in Wuhan in China. And we were watching it sort of spread across Asia. And it just basically chased our tails. Even John was in Shanghai 2 weeks before it broke out. And then we were in Europe in the first 2 weeks of Feb on all the places really where it's hitting.
You've just been 10 days ahead of everything, haven't you?
And then we moved home. Well, I moved home just on 2 weeks ago. John moved home 5 days ago. And I know it's 5 days ago because he's in day 5 of self-isolation.
I have memes I can send him. Let me know when he wants to see Kermit the Frog dancing on 8 bottles of wine. And
so his way of coping with the change right now is to find some joy, and he's creating his quarantine playlist, which he said he's going to play back in time to come to remember what it was like. So I think he should download Add to That Man in the Mirror because it's a great song about life right now, looking at Man in the Mirror and what we can do to change.
Yeah. Well, thank you for coming and guesting today. This was all hatched up literally an hour ago. I love putting my friend Wendy on the spot for really good talks. And look, yay, welcome back. Bit of a virtual hug from me because at least we're in the same city and time zone now. So
yeah, and it's all you'd want to be doing because I'm one of the 80% that have returned from overseas, causing apparently the virus to spread around Australia.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll keep you locked down, but we can share you virtually via the podcast.
Yeah.
The reason I kind of called you an hour ago was I started to plan this episode to be around caring for teams. And the more I mind mapped it out on my piece of paper, I kept circling back to change management and what it is and what it isn't. And what I'm thinking may be happening is that business owners understandably are light years ahead with reading and information and decisions and sort of forward plans and contingencies and financial mapping and all sorts of things, but their teams may not be quite there. And whilst the business owner is juggling with uncertainty on a hour-by-hour basis and forward projecting, the team are potentially wondering about what's going to happen to them and what their new work future is going to look at. So we've got a few topics here that we may or may not get to, but in the context of that, and because you know Allied Health, what are the principles of change management that are really useful for Allied Health business owners to start to understand?
I think we've probably never been tested to the degree of uncertainty that we've never experienced. And I think the other big part of this, it's uncertainty, not just a for a forced financial change or something to, you know, maybe funding structure. This is really personal. This is about individuals. This is about health, testing our health and our family members' health. So I think it's just at another level that none of us have experienced. We've never had a pandemic worldwide. If you think about the pandemics we've had, the Spanish flu, for example, they've been limited to a country or
a continent. An area, yeah.
So, you know, I don't know if any of us have got the answers, but I just think I start from the point of view this is uncertainty for everybody, for business leaders and their teams. And the role as a business leader that we can all take up is providing as much certainty as we can. And I think I fall back on the approaches of communication, and clarity. I'm a big one for clarity. And I think they're the two kind of things that I think about all the time when I'm leading projects and a whole lot of other stuff. But this is also about keeping it simple today. Because everybody's overwhelmed. We're overwhelmed. Ourselves individually, we're going to be overwhelmed about our financial, day-to-day security and business operations, but we're also going to be, worried about us, the team.
It's interesting that you used business leader. I use business owner and you use business leader.
I think about leadership. So there's a great guy, one of my favourite gurus in the world called Simon Weston. He's Irish, so he's great. What more can you say about the Irish? I think they're great people and probably the ones that are going to survive right now really well because they've got a history of surviving. So Simon Weston, remember that name, and he talks about eco-leadership. And just to sort of probably bring it down to something accessible to everybody is, to me, I translate that a lot in my work to distributed leadership. And I think everybody has a role as being a leader, whether you're the business owner, of course you have enormous leadership responsibilities, but so does the person who's at the front line. We all have an opportunity to take up a leadership role, and it's just, it's different. How do we shape that? And I've worked with teams in the US and Malaysia, particularly around leadership and leading projects. Yes, I'm the project leader, but you're leading something else and you're leading something else. In fact, we're all leading it together. So how do you distribute the role of leadership across your team? Because that's going to help you as the business owner But it's also going to allow someone to take up some roles of certainty as well. And I think, yeah, I always think of a business leader. I never think of
as a business owner. Yeah. And I guess this kind of sits right down into leading self first.
Mm. Absolutely. I think I'll go back to some great, you know, sort of Buddhist approaches in life. I love Buddhism, and I practice Ayurveda. It's the scent, my soul work, as well as my gut work. Don't have a great gut in life. And, you know, just talking to my Ayurvedic doctor in Kuala Lumpur not long before I left, you know, and sort of navigating the change of coming back here and different roles and responsibilities in Australia than what I've had in the last 8 years from being away from family, is he said, the most important thing you can do, Wendy, is be happy and be healthy.
Yeah.
And once you are happy and healthy yourself, Wendy, then you can spread that to others. And he just said it like that. I love him. Love him. And that stays with me every day right now too, is, you know, I have a family, myself, community that also needs help, that are in isolation for other reasons. But I go back to looking after ourselves, and then we can give to others. So as the leader, business owner, the most important thing, the first thing you do every morning you wake up, is how can I look after myself?
Yeah.
And that's, you know, it's your health and your happiness. They're two things I think about. So how are you eating, getting some exercise,
your sleep your way through this.
It's interesting. Someone was sharing with me about a coach in America who's done some recent, very quick research on 29 CEOs he's been working with in the US. Mm. And only three of those CEOs are what I said to start, what I started with about positioning themselves for prosperity. Only three of those 29. The others have gone into panic and fear or sort of fight or flight. Only three of them. And of those three CEOs, what they've been doing, what they're doing or have been doing for a long time, is meditating. And in fact, they've just upped. They're doing it twice a day.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm a great meditator. I love meditating and do transcendental meditation. Have done for 10 years now.
Have you doubled up?
Yeah. I've been saying it every day. This is interesting. So in terms of meditation, it's lovely to have a meditation approach, and some people listening may say, oh, I don't meditate, there's another thing I'm not doing. You can meditate in the garden, you can meditate as you walk. At the moment it's around the house.
I put in pauses.
Yeah, pauses, just even like a minute of just sitting, 30 seconds, 10 seconds.
Off tech.
One of the greatest strengths, one of the greatest skills, you know, principles of leadership is pausing.
Mm.
And it's meditative. So, yes, I do my formal 20-minute meditation every day, and now I'm going to up that to twice when I can. But if I can't do the second one, it will be a meditative walk, just a walk outside, or it's time in the garden touching the soil. And I really, really do believe right now, everybody, the leader and the whole teams, if you can have each one of your teams focusing on their own health and happiness first, then start extending that out to others.
Yeah, yeah. Right down to nutrition and hydration and even being barefoot outside. I don't know.
Touch the ground.
We've never talked about ground. Have we talked about grounding?
I've talked a lot about experienced grounding after living in Kuala Lumpur the first time, surrounded by concrete.
Yeah, you were, 11 floors off the ground, whatever it was.
The second time we were, 11, but the first time we were actually on the ground. But what struck me a lot, and actually I think contributed some ill health then, was I noticed how much I wasn't touching grass. Mm-hmm. I was always on concrete at the pool, in our courtyard, in our home we had big, you know, tiles. I missed grass. So I had to actually, we did have a patch of grass, I had to take my shoes off and go and walk on that every day just to feel earth. And that was that was a conscious action because I hadn't realised how much I took it for granted in Australia.
There's a whole science behind it. So between us speaking an hour ago, I've been down the beach.
Yeah. Yep.
to get that ionic transfer, because I know I've got a big few hours ahead. So, hydration, nutrition, fresh air, sunlight.
I've been walking the neighbourhood and I've been purposely stopping and smelling the roses. I love roses.
It reminds me of my mum. Love them.
And I'm just coming back here, there's gardens again. I've got gardens. I just don't have palm trees and concrete buildings all around. I have gardens in my neighbourhood and I've just been stopping intentionally, and it's almost become unconscious now, just pause and smell the roses. And that's a part of a good health too.
Yeah. And sleep. I just want to say sleep one more time.
Yeah. I think we can finish with sleep.
Yeah. Oh, goodness. Yeah. Because I'm hearing that business owners are putting in 16, 17-hour days, and that's been this week. So we're recording this third week of March. There's a lot more to come. So to really keep the tank.
And I think if you can't sleep, then if you wake up in the middle of the night, I think the one thing to do is focus on breathing.
Yeah.
And when I had a lovely yoga teacher in Pittsburgh. I just miss her, Kendall, beautiful lady. And we finished one of our yoga sessions with breathing. And she taught me, and it's always stayed with me. And I actually find this very centering, is I put my left hand on my gut and my right hand on my heart.
Heart chakra, yeah.
Yeah, and I just breathe.
Mm.
And I find that really good for me in the middle of the night, like the 2 a.m. to 4 a.m. wake-ups. Oh, ooh. I do them.
Let's come round to what you said about communication and whether it's daily or hourly or twice a day or what it takes. A lot of communication now is going to be done virtually via Voxer, via Trello, via Zoom as well. Yeah. What are your thoughts about that virtual communication in terms of team care?
So much to share.
Just pick the nuggets, Wendy.
Yeah, I'm going to. Probably a couple of things that maybe tools.
Tools, go for it.
Here's a couple of tools. I think communication is so important, and there's an old saying around communication, you need to do it 7 times, 7 different ways for it to sink in. I always keep that in mind, because virtual communication is so essential, and I, you know, have a lot of, I coach clients all around the world, so I've been doing it, and I worked from Pittsburgh with a client in Chicago for a year, so a lot of my work was virtual. And absolutely great via Zoom or Skype or FaceTime, whatever tool. I don't think the tool matters, as long as
that is just the vehicle for the message.
Who you are communicating with. Don't worry about if you don't have one of those. What do they have? And adapt to them. What are they comfortable with? And adapt to them as the leader. That's kind of responsibility you have, is to ask them what works for them. Because it could be FaceTime, because it might be there on the phone, you know, and that's the tool that they find really easily, whichever way it is. But there's, I lived in Asia for many years. WhatsApp is the tool of the trade. Yeah.
And secure too.
It's secure. You can get groups. It's great for groups. So if you don't know the tool and you kind of think, so WhatsApp is great for it's all via Wi-Fi, but you can set up groups. So HR team I was working with in Malaysia at a university, we had a WhatsApp group and we had several of them. So we had them for our little project group. We had them for the whole of HR. We had them for the three key sort of, project leaders. And we communicated a lot via that. But you can also do it, you can also set up video calls through WhatsApp. So the whole of Asia operates on WhatsApp except for China, who have their own. But I love WhatsApp for communication. But that's my preference. But I like it from the multiple ways you can use it, and it's just so simple. And also, you can delete a message really quickly, which is so really handy. So things like that are really important. So it's that 7x7 is a good rule. Mm. You don't have to do 7x7 because that's 49 ways. In formal projects, it's a good rule of thumb. So online communication, but sometimes it's just sending a text message to your team, which could be a lovely photo of a rose. Look at this rose I smelt today. So it's a bit of joy. And then I think also don't dismiss that just picking up the phone sometimes, which could take more time, but it's an old-fashioned method now, but sometimes people appreciate not the video.
Yeah.
Kind of finding what's good for them. And then it depends what your work is at the moment. So another good thing to think about is when you're communicating and it's around work, is having clarity about your about what you're communicating. I don't know if you've heard of the RACI.
No, I don't think so. Oh, if you've great told me, I'll remind me now.
So who's responsible?
Okay.
Accountable, consulted, and informed.
Okay.
When I'm working on projects, I always think about who's responsible for the task, and the responsible person or people could be more than one person. Who's responsible for doing the thing, the task? Who's accountable? Always one person. Could be the business owner most of the time, but you might have asked, your team assistant to be the person accountable. Where does the buck stop with? Who does it stop with? Mm-hmm. Who's the ultimate, person and responsible? Who do you want to consult with? So you want to get some information. It's to-fro, and who do you need to keep informed? So I kind of think whenever I'm doing tasks or a project, I think of the RACI. Who's responsible for doing that? Who's accountable, consulted, informed? Have I covered all of that? It's quite simple, quite nice. It's also a nice way if you're doing, this is an opportunity to do, so doing some projects if you haven't got the clients to do the business. So here's a really nice story of a friend of mine in Malaysia. She owns a business called The Global Student. So her business is dependent on students coming from Australia and New Zealand to do internships in Malaysia, Southeast Asia. Boom, boom.
No, I'm sure she's adjusting.
Actually, this is a nice story. So January, she started getting cancellations back in January because she's not that far. It's a long way from China, but we also have a lot of Chinese, so there's all these old assumptions made. So she started losing business in January. I spoke to her last week just to check in to see how she's going because she's lost all her intern programs. She has started working with universities in Australia to build online internships. So universities that she's met, she had a conference towards the end of last year where they started talking about building these online internship programs, and everyone was like, oh, I'm not sure. Well, she's just gone pow, approached them. So she's got a team of, I think there's five of them working with her, Malaysians. In Malaysia, there is no social security. There is no job seeker, I think it's now called, New Start. There's nothing. There's no nothing to fall back on in Malaysia. No work, no money. No money, no food. Probably the family will come in, the Eastern culture, the family will come in and help. But these are very independent women. I've met them all. So they've gone into a project method, sort of modality, mentality straight away. So she's now leading project work with her team, and they're falling back on the RACI. Every project they're doing, it's about the, who's responsible, accountable, consulted, informed. She's using either Trello or Asana. I think she's moving on to Asana with her project.
Oh, we're going to have the Trello-Asana conversation.
Yes, I can, very much. It's a form of communication. So to keep everybody up to date with what task they're doing and communicating through Trello or Asana, absolute clarity once again about, how you're working, how you're communicating, what your roles and responsibilities are, will reduce the stresses so much.
Yeah.
So much. I know I do it for me. So when my husband and I moved countries, we had our project plan. And when
you had a Trello board.
We did the first time. I actually moved on to Asana for my move from Malaysia.
There's an announcement. Yeah, you Asana'd this last move.
I Asana'd my project in Malaysia, actually. I got the university I was working on.
Wow.
As an organisation client on Asana because they loved it so much.
Maybe quickly explain what Trello and Asana are.
Okay, so they're two tools that you can use to help manage tasks. And they're built on the old Kanban approach from when Toyota in Japan needed to do things quickly to build
and
cars.
Visualize work.
So we all know OTs how powerful visual methodologies are. So I started using Trello 10 years ago because it was so visual. I love mind mapping. And I love Trello. And it's lovely with just cards that you can put the tasks on and put information in that card and move them across from very simply to do, doing, done. And there can be variations of that. Then actually it was you, Kathy, that told me about Asana, because I'd been watching the space of what was being developed around project tools, because I work with project teams remotely most of the time, that I looked at Asana and I thought, oh, there's some value in that for my project team. So we moved the project last year that I was working on, an HR project, into from Trello and started mapping it into Asana when it was getting bigger, and then got the Provost Vice Chancellor using Asana, which I would say is Trello on steroids, is how I describe it.
But you can't change the background. Not as pretty.
It's not as pretty. I agree. I struggle with the prettiness of it.
I think I need to talk to them.
Both tools. Well, I've now becoming an Asana Pro. So.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah.
I'm so happy that you're back in Melbourne, because you can help me sort Trello, but we've pretty much moved, we've largely moved off Trello operationally. Yeah. I still use it with clients.
I agree. I think there's places for both. And I think from a communication perspective, both tools bring great value. I think Trello is much prettier and visually engaging, but Asana has the sort of the guts behind it to
much better communication.
Operationally is a great word for project management for me. It just costs, you know, I think that's another thing for someone to think about. When I'm talking about those two tools, Asana is, you know, probably 10 times the expense of Trello. And it depends what you want. What value is it going to bring you? I think that's the place to think about. I think Trello is a great place to start, but if you're thinking about it with more people, with multiple projects, layers of tasks, because you can do tasks, subtasks of subtasks of subtasks, then I believe Asana will bring you the value regardless of the cost. Because remember, it is expensive. Yeah.
Asana, the free version of Asana is phenomenal.
Yeah, I just love the Gantt chart. That's what, for me.
Of course you do.
Because I've got, that's my background. When I'm working with clients, I'd say I'll pay for that.
Yep, fair call.
Both fantastic online tools across all devices. And they're they go really well with the RACI model, because it really give absolute clarity about who's responsible and accountable, and then who you're consulting with, but who you can keep informed by adding people to the task just for an FYI.
Yeah.
Yep. That's really good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ah, very good. Well, we'll have to have a glass of wine and do some Asana.
Absolutely.
But I guess these tools are for business leaders who are wanting to make work flow and projects virtual and visible and shared.
I think absolutely for the flow, because it is about what do you stop, start, keep doing. And that's another methodology that I use a lot. Yeah. Is what do you, you know, right now, what can you stop doing?
Yeah, right now. The quit cycle.
Yeah, what do you start doing and what do you keep doing? So I just really think that that's an important thing to be thinking about, because you're going to have to stop doing some things, because you won't have the brain space and the energy to do all the things that you were doing a month ago, 2 months ago.
Yeah.
There's a whole pile of new things.
The fatigue I'm hearing about is decision-making fatigue and responsibility fatigue.
So yeah.
I called it that.
That's a really good – that's
a
really
great
good,
word.
Yeah, it is. So I think if you can think about, you know, one, the RACI, but also what do you stop, start, keep doing to help manage your workload. And it could be every day, what am I stopping? What am I starting? What am I keeping doing? So I think you know, Asana and Trello are great tools for mapping that out and, you know, giving people ownership of tasks and communicating from that perspective. I think they also bring some flow to your workday too. But I think there's another element to this, and it's about some trust. So in these times of change, you know, as we said, uncertainty, I think what team members need is to feel trust between the business owner and also know that the business owner trusts them to do what they've got to do. So that two-way trust is really, really important. So as much as possible, allowing people to take up their roles of responsibility and trusting them, you will have the trust if you build great clarity and you build great communication. I really have seen that so many times. The trust from team members disappears when they don't know what's happening. and they don't have clarity about what they've got to do. It's incredibly powerful, their clarity in communication.
There's also trust of self. And I guess that sits with being as strong as you can be at a cellular level, which we've already spoken about, but also that calm. Calm is contagious. Calm courage that I'm making the best possible decisions I can right now. It doesn't matter whether they're not quite right. They're just my best ones. Take out the just. They're my best ones right now based on what I know. And I think doubt will be
a big thing.
Yeah. But to be able to manage doubt decisions and be as comfortable as you possibly can be, that, man, oh, man, you've done your absolute best.
I think this is, I go back to experience. Experience is so powerful, but guess what? We've never experienced this before.
Yeah.
So everyone is going to make errors. I want everyone to know that they're going to make errors.
Yep. Yeah.
To minimize the errors, the best approach to minimize the errors, because you're going to make them, like, just going to tell you now, there's a bell curve here. Yep, there's a bell curve.
Because if you're not making them, you're not making any decisions at all, which exactly. is differently problematic.
But if we look at that bell curve, you're going to make some phenomenal decisions. Like in the moment, you're probably going to look back and go, my God, how did I make that
where
decision?
Where did that one come from?
You're going to make some really shitty ones at the other end of the bell curve because and then there'll be a whole lot of the middle that will be good decisions.
And possibly shared and sort of collegiate decisions as well.
And the more you share them, the better they will be. But I find the best times, the best decisions I made are when I pause. I pause. I stop. I think. I intuit.
Walk away from the desk.
I intuit my gut feeling.
Yeah.
And I reflect before I respond. So that's stirring. So there's a couple of lots of R's in there. So there's the racy and there's the stirring. Stop. Think. Intuit. Reflect and then respond. And if you just stop and think about stirring, stop, think, intuit, reflect, respond, there's your pause. And your decision will be so much better, so much better. Maybe the
but
same
your confidence
thing
around your decision will, your confidence wrapping around the decision will be stronger.
Yeah. And we know when making great decisions, confidence is a big part. Competence is the other thing, the two C's.
Yeah.
And I think about those as buckets. You can have amazing competence, but if you don't have the confidence, you're not going to do very well. You can have great confidence and no competence, and you're going to fake it and not probably do great. So I think about there's probably three places in life where I think about my bucket. How full is my bucket? How full is my confidence bucket? How full is my competence bucket? Do I need to learn a little bit more? And the other one is my energy. In my energy, I think about always filling up that bucket, that tank of energy, and that sleeping, eating, meditating, walking, pausing, having some fun. Watch something really funny. Watch a really joyful show. Just for even 20 minutes, 15 minutes. Go and listen to some great music. Pick up the phone and talk to a friend who knows nothing about your business and can tell you something else about that you don't know any, that you don't relate, need to relate about work.
I went and chatted with the Chooks yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
And I might go, we have kangaroos in the national park near us, so I might go and see how they're going tonight as well. Enjoy that from inner city Melbourne. Oh, you got roses. We don't have any
roses. I've got my roses. I've got my parks, lots and lots of parks, which, for me, living in Kuala Lumpur, I didn't have that many parks. As you came to visit me.
Yeah.
Finding green space was, so precious.
Yeah.
Absolutely precious.
Yeah. All righty, gorgeous lady. Parting words. Parting words from you.
Probably the thing that comes to my mind, and it comes to my mind for myself and for others, is to be kind to ourselves kind to others. We've never had this experience before. So you're actually at the same level as everybody else right now.
Pioneering.
No other business owners have done this before. So we have a choice here. We can either go into panic and be really fear-focused.
Mm-hmm.
we could kind of stay the same. Our business could stay the same as what it is today.
Bounce a bit.
Yep, yeah. Bounce a bit, but it will look the same in, you know, 6 months, 12 months, 18 months, 36 months, however long, we don't know. Or you could see this as an opportunity to grow and do things different.
Yeah. And to position.
Positioning for prosperity. Yeah. And that prosperity for me is about not just finance. It's about yourself. Joy. What can you learn about yourself right now? And also prosperity for your team. Give them big virtual hugs, but give them lots of clarity and lots of communication.
Oh, it's so good to have you back.
Thank you. It's nice to be back. I would have thought my 8 years as an expatriate would have ended really differently, but not like this. Never in a million years would I thought I would have come back to self-isolation. And
you have a habit of changing country during extreme events.
I did. I moved to the US in the vortex.
40 to minus 40.
It was just... This is worse, though. This is worse than the polar vortex and the Arctic blast.
Yeah.
That's all Alrighty. Good experiences.
Big love to you.
Oh, big love to you, and lots of love to your business owner community, who are all, in my words, business leaders.
Indeed. Yeah. Thanks a lot.
No worries. Bye.
Bye. I hope you enjoyed today's episode of the Private Practice Made Perfect podcast. For show notes and other resources, please visit practicemadeperfectpodcast.com. While you are there, you can subscribe for future episodes and continue your business adventure with me. And please be sure to share this and other episodes with your friends and colleagues.